Today we're gonna try to solve a puzzle that comes at the very, very end of Parshat Noach. It's actually the introduction to Parshat Lech Lecha, but because it's at the end of Noach and we've never done it before, it's a great opportunity to do it. So turn to the end of Parshat Lech Lecha, the end of Parshat Noach, sorry, the very, very end, Parak Yud Aleph, chapter 11, in Parshat Noach, which is the Pasuk. Let's start from Pasuk Chaf Dalet, chapter 11, Chaf Dalet 24. And this all started from the fact that
Noach is this week.
Isn't it crazy? The problem with... What? Well, the problem is that Bereshit comes after Simchat Torah. And very often, like this year, it came a day after Simchat Torah. So you don't have time to... Like, Bereshit is really, really, really incredibly rich. Incredibly rich. It's worthwhile to consider studying Bereshit in depth.
Yeah, it's a lot of.
You know what I'm saying? There's a ton.
And do you like one verse, and it's like.
Oh, we're gonna. That's. I mean, there's like. If you ever, we'll study some of it today, but I don't know. People like to do Parsha Shavuot, so many, many years we skip Bereshit because it just doesn't work out, which is a shame. What's that?
Is this when the flood actually started?
What do you mean?
Because like, Noah comes after Simchat Torah and the way the world is this when the rain...
No. That's a total coincidence. I wouldn't say floods. I mean, it was the rainy season, but the way the Gemara says that for many years, but in the times of the Mishnah, they didn't do it. They didn't have a cycle of once every year. Right? Simchat Torah is a Gaonic innovation. They would go through once every 3 years, some communities once every 5 years. Like the way we read the Torah. What's that?
First time to embrace.
Yeah, like Parshiot. What are we up to? I don't know. Like the whole concept of Parshiot is a historically relatively rabbinic innovation idea about Parsha, like a weekly Parsha. But okay, that being said, so we have a puzzle. The puzzle we're going to discuss is the mystery we're going to try to unravel is who was born when, where was Avraham born? What's Avraham's origin story? And the problem is that the psukim give us conflicting messages, conflicting picture of what really happened, where Avraham is from, and where he went. Okay? And I'll explain. I'll explain to you the problems, and then, of course, we're going to discuss some of the very, very famous midrashim that are there, and then try to see some of the solutions that different mefarshim answer. Start a chavdalet. Vayhi Nachor, Teisha ve'asim, Vayichir Nachor, Teisha ve'asim shana, v'yolad et Tarach. So this is a guy named Nachor. We're in the middle of the 10 generations from Noach to Abraham. Just a list of people.
What's the connection between Nachor and Noach?
We'll get there.
Oh, sorry.
Okay? Vayichi Nachor achor yalidu et Terach, 19 shana, u'me'at shana, v'yolid banim banot. So this is guy Nachor. Nachor has a son named Terach. Okay? We do a family tree. It makes life easier. Okay? We have Nachor. Nachor has a son named Terach. Very good. Vayichi Terach. Where are we? Chavav. Vayichi Terach 70 shana, v'yolid et Avram, et Nachor, v'et Haran. Okay, so Terach also had a son, had three sons. He had Avram, Nachor, and Haran. Everybody got it? Family tree? Terach. Nachor had a son named Terach, but a son named Nachor.
Right.
You know, the grandfather, married to the grandson, Nachor Jr. Okay? Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Ve'ele toldot Terach. Terach holidet Avram et Nachor ve'et Haran. V'Haran holidet Lot. Well, this is very unusual. Now it says the same thing almost twice. Very unusual. Okay? V'Haran had holidet Lot. So now what do I have here? I'm just going to add on. Haran had a son named Lot. Okay? So who is Lot to Avram? Lot is Avram's nephew. Very good. Chaf Chet. Vayamat Haran al pnei Terach Aviv be'eretz moladeto be'ur kastim. Okay. Haran died al pnei Terach Aviv. Al pnei, translation?
His father killed him.
His father killed him. That's what it sounds like to you?
That's what in the beginning it
is. Al pnei. What does al pnei mean? In front of.
It says in the lifetime of.
In the lifetime of, while you're reading the English, what does al pnei mean in Hebrew?
On the face.
On the face of. What does that mean in this context?
In front of him.
Well, no. According to us.
In your face.
In your face, right? It's in front of. That's what you're saying.
Well, don't they do child sacrifice in the dead time?
Ooh. Sacrificed by the father. Al pene doesn't just sound like lifne.
Right.
It sounds like al pene,
yes.
By the hand of, through, somehow that there was an involvement. Doesn't it sound like that?
Yes.
Okay, that's what it sounds like. Okay, be'eretz moladito be'ur kastim, in the land, in the place of his birth, in Ur Kastim. Vayikach Avram v'Nachor lahem nashim. So now we're going to do a little interlude. Avram Nachor have wives. Shem acha ishet Avram. What's that? Shame. Well, we don't know who died when. Shame Eshet Na Avram Sarai. Shame Eshet Nachor Milka. Milka is Bat Haran, the daughter of Haran. Avi Milka Vavi Yiska. 1 second. So Milka is the daughter of Haran.
He married his niece.
Shame Eshet Nachor. Nachor married Milka. Bat Haran. Avi Milka, Bavi Yiska. 1 second. So let's get it straight. Haran had Lot. Who else did he have?
Milka.
Right? Milka and Yiska. Okay? So who married Milka? Nachor married Milka. Now we're getting to this. Now this starts to look like. This starts to look like when you're all of us are learning Yivamot in Daf Yomi. You follow when you're, you know, you're learning Daf Yomi, no? And if your husbands are learning Daf Yomi, you get these crazy nutty charts. No, you never saw? Yivamot comes with a book, or some of the books that come with it comes with books like this, which explain to you the various genealogical charts of who can marry who and who can't marry whom. Right, that's what we spend our time doing. So now we're
this is before the Torah.
This is before the Torah, right? But you can marry your niece. It's totally halachic to marry your niece.
Yeah, you just can't marry your uncle.
That's not the other way around.
Right, not the
what?
Other way around.
A niece you can't marry your aunt.
Uncle.
No, a niece can marry your uncle.
You can't marry your aunt.
A nephew cannot marry your aunt. Okay? But Avram married who? Sarai. Okay, where is Sarai from? Look at Rashi a second. Yiska. Rashi, Sarah. Zo, Yiska. Zo, Sarah. Okay, so who did Avram marry? Sarai, so it's also Yiska is Sarai, according to the Midrash. So Avram also married his niece.
So who died?
Nobody died yet. Who died? Haran died in Ur Kasdim.
So all the children are alive.
The children are alive. Haran, Lot is alive. Lot is alive, because we're going to deal with Lot for many years. Yiska married Nachor, right? Yiska married Avram, and Milka married Nachor.
Okay.
Vatihi Sarai Akara in the Balad. Sarai was barren. Sarai was what?
Well, they said Avi Yiska.
Why is she called? So Rashi says she's called Yiska. Why is she called Yiska? Look at Rashi for a second. We'll go back. Shh. Hashem Shesucha Beruach Hakodesh. Right, sukkah, like a sukkah, she's enveloped in Ruach HaKodesh. V'akos sochin b'yafya, and all are, anybody have a translation of Rashi? Sochin b'yafya, enveloped in her beauty. V'od yiska lashon nisichut, she was a princess. Kamo sara lashon sarara. Okay, so the Midrash, of course, the Midrash is never going to say anything bad about Sarai. Okay, but the understanding was that Avram, by the way, why did Avram marry his niece? Why did Avram marry his niece? They all married their niece.
Yeah,
everybody did that. That's what it was. You married in the clan. Okay, that's just the nature of things. Everybody married in the family. If you married out of the family, that was a big deal. You married out of the family to another clan in order to, anybody know? What? Make peace, create alliances. Absolutely. Right. And as we look in the news today, as much as we think that things have changed, still clans. Everything is still my family. My brother, and then, you know, my uncle. And you know what I'm saying? That's the way the world works, at least in this part of the world. Okay, pasuk lamed. Oh no, did lamed. Lamed aleph. Vayikach Terach et Avram beno, veet Lot ben Haran ben beno, veet Sarai kalato veeshet Avram beno. Okay, so Terach took Avram his son, Lot ben Haran ben beno, Lot his grandson. Okay, Terach takes Avram, Lot. Okay. That Sarai kalato eshet Avram, and Sarai his wife, Vayitzu itam mi'or kastim lalechet arza Kanaan. He says, we're out of here. We're leaving Or Kastim to go to Kanaan. Vayesh vayavo ad Charan vayeshu sham. They get to Charan and they dwell there. Now look at the chart. Who's missing, obviously? Who's missing? Who didn't he take?
Nahor.
Nahor, right? So he takes, Terach takes Avram. Where's Haran, by the way?
Haran is dead.
Haran is dead, correct. Nahor is somehow still in the picture, alive, but he doesn't go. Terach takes Avram and Lot, and their wives, obviously, and everyone that's with them. Okay? And they went from Ur Kasdim to go to Arza Kanaan, and then they get to, no, where do they get to?
Haran.
Vayeshu sham, and they dwelt there. Vayu yimei Terach chamesh shanim umetayim shana. Vayama Terach becharan. Right, so Terach gets to Haran. He lives there for another 100. He lives for however many years he lives till he ripe old age of 205, and he dies in Haran. Next pasuk. Vayama Hashem el Avram lech lecha me'artzecha umimoladetecha umibeit avicha. El Haaretz Asher Areka. Go from, you're already saying the question, go from your land, Artzecha, Moladitecha, your
birthplace,
Ubeit Avicha, your father's house, to the land that I will show you. According to the chronology, this raises our question that we need to investigate. According to what we've said until now, where is Avram? So let's look at the map for a second.
He already
met. Okay, where is Ur Kasdim? Anybody know where Ur Kasdim is on the map? Ur Kasdim is down here, near the Arabian Gulf. That's the bottom of Babylonia, Babel, as it were. Okay? Here, Ur Kasdim. Right, Ur.
What is that in modern times?
I don't know. Anybody know?
Yeah.
No, Qatar, I think. You know, right, right near, this is the Gulf, this is the Persian Gulf. What? Why? Well, right there.
The worst enemy that we have.
No, they're our friends. Okay.
You've been watching too much news.
I've been believing the news. Right? Okay. Or Kasdim. And Avram went. Here is Haran. You can't travel here. This is desert. You'll die. Okay. So the trade routes all
on the
Nahar Prat. Right. You travel along the river, the Nahar Prat, the Euphrates River. Okay, you travel all along the river until you get to Haran, and then you follow this is the Fertile Crescent, right, as we all know, you follow along the trade routes down to the land of Canaan. So the real question is, first of all, it's clear, according to the Pesukim, that who initiates the travel to Terach initiates it. And he's on the way to Eretz Canaan.
And he
stops in Haran. He's on the way to Canaan. Why does he stop in Haran? Look at what Rashi suggests.
It says how many.
Okay. Well, that's just to get to. And then Avram continues on to Eretz Canaan. Okay, this isn't just Stam. These are known routes, known trade routes. This is the way the migrations occurred at the time. Like he clearly had heard about Eretz Canaan. The question, so we have two questions. Who initiates the travel? Because according to the Torah, it seems like Terach initiates it. But then, three psukim later, Vayam Hashem el Avram, lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetecha mi'beit avicha. God is telling Avram to leave. So, who really initiates leaving? First of all. Second of all, if they're already in Haran, stuck there, why does it say, artzecha, moladetecha, u'beit avicha? Where apparently is Avram from? Where is Avram from?
Ur
Kasdim. Third question, why do they leave? This is something that, of course, consumes Chazal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why does Terach initiate this? I mean, people don't travel. So we're going to buy into the Midrash. We're going to see the Midrashim. These are famous Midrashim, but we should see them. Okay, because we've never studied the Midrashim themselves. What? These are good questions. It's like a mystery. You know what I'm saying? These are, like, why do they leave Ur Kasdim? What's that? You would think so, wouldn't you? Okay, that's why we're here. Okay, and nobody can that right. Yeah, we finished Parsha Noah. Right. Well, that's the whole idea of Parshiot. It's an artificial separation. It's really not a separation in the text at all.
People aren't.
finish.
You know, sometimes they say, well, the
well, actually, it makes sense to look at them as separate units because the story of Avram begins with Vayomer Hashem al Avram. Until that time, we have no connection. We have no knowledge. Did God come to Avram? Okay? So therefore, it would seem the story of Avram begins with Lech Lecha. The story of Noach ends with Terach, ends with the lineage of Avram and the birth of Avram. So it makes sense. But we're trying to come to a larger picture.
And this all happened after the flood.
Oh yeah, it's all well after the flood. Well after the flood. Okay? So I have to share with you. I mean, I was not privy to this Midrash. The Midrash talks about, I really cannot recommend enough buying the set because, as you can see, I use it all the time and it's ridiculously well worn. Right, this Osar Midrashim, it's so great. Mostly because, A, they bring many of the Midrashim that appear in Rashi. I think I've said this before. Okay, buy yourselves a gift. Right, the Rashi appears in gray and then the Midrash that the Rashi is based upon. Secondly, they made the language, they'll explain it and add in language, and it has vowels. So it's great. It opens up the Midrash a lot. Can't recommend it highly enough. Listen to this wacky Midrash. Says the Midrash. Okay. Anybody know the name? You can ask your kids. This is a good riddle for the Parsha. What was the name of Avram's mother? What was Avram's mother's name? Terach's wife who had given birth to Avram.
But doesn't tell us.
No, you don't know. So the Midrash name says her name was Amtalai Bat Karnavo. Amtalai Bat Karnavo. You can write that one down.
Next girl. Okay.
What's that?
Amtalai?
Yeah, right. But just know, the Midrash says, Hamad's mother's name was also Amtalai.
Okay.
But Haman's mother's name was Amtalai Bat Urvita. Okay, so Abram's mother's name was Karnavo. Her grandfather's name was Karnavo. Karnavo from the word Karim. Sheep, which are tahor. Okay, so his mother came from kosher animals, whereas Haman's mother's name, Urvtah, from Arov, from the raven, quoth the raven, nevermore. Okay, so that's bad. Anyway, so you know, Avram's mother's name is Amtalai, according to the Midrash. This is Vayhi Be'et Nusach Acher. You always get into the Vayhis. If you ever read Midrashim, then when it starts to go into like pseudo biblical language, then it gets really colorful. Vayihi be'et achazuha chevle leida. Braxton Hicks came to Amtalai. Okay, so she's about to give birth. Vatelech el me'ara achat vateled ben. She went into a cave and she gave birth to a son. Vatire'e et ha-me'ara mi'ira kashemesh. Okay? It exactly reminds us of the Midrashim that surround Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, and she saw the cave was lit like the sun. Me'or p'nei hayeled, from the light of the face of this child. Batismach simcha gdola. What does it sound like I'm reading to you? I'm reading to you like children's stories. So just understand, literature develops. We call them midrashim, but it's called the yalkut. Right? The yalkut develops these midrashim over time. Midrashic stories surrounding the births of our great leaders. As you, right away you notice, you're sure you've heard the idea that Moshe's face shone. So you never heard it about Avram. I never heard it before. I never read this Midrash. But, you know, did it really happen? It didn't matter. You know, the idea is to convey the pure birth. The real question is, why did she give birth in a cave? Like, why did she run to a cave to give birth?
Maybe that's more the sign. Like,
private. Listen to the rest. So the Midrash says, Vatiftach piha vatomar. Amtalai opens her mouth and she says, Oili, shiladaticha bizman hazeh. Woe is to me that I gave birth to you at this time. Shamelech Nimrod harag ba'avurcha 70,000 zecharim. Nimrod has killed because of you 70,000 children, boys. Vani efchad ulai yivadal ha-melech v'yehargucha. And I am afraid maybe the king will find out and he will kill you. Now here comes the parentheses. Because then I saw this Midrash, I'm like, what the heck is going on? Okay? So of course, in order to understand what the heck is going on, you have to go to the Yalkut. Okay, you go to the Yalkut, and then you start to read, and you see what happens in the birth of Avram that implies that Avram has to be, that, one second, that in the birth of Avram. What's that? Sounds exactly like Moshe and the killing of the boys. So somehow, in the passage of time,
it's the same.
What's that? It's the same thing, okay? Why did it happen? Why did it happen? Says the Yalkut. If you guys have Yalkut Me'amloiz, anybody have it? You can have it. It's in English also. You all know Yalkut Me'amloiz was not written in Hebrew. It was written in, anybody know? I think it was in Esperanto, I think, right? In some Sephardic language. And translated both into Hebrew and to Rabbi Yaakov Kuli. Anyway, here. Hu'atakzu ha'pama rishonam le'lashon ha'kodesh. It's copied, it was translated to Hebrew. Right? The English translation is just as authentic as the Hebrew translation. Anyway, so you should know. So it says the following. I could read it to you in English. I just don't have a copy of the English Yaakov Me'amloiz. Okay? One second. Balayla shabo nolad Avram. The night that Avram was born. Ra'u chachmei nimrod b'chachmatam. Tell me if this sounds familiar. The wise men of Nimrod. Who's Nimrod? The king of? Bavel. Saw in their wisdom. Shekokav gadol yosei min hamizrach. Verat nirikia. Right, a star goes from the east and runs into the earth. Ubala dalik kochavim me'arba ruchot ha'olam, and swallows up four other stars. And they interpreted this to mean, okay, that ben atid lihiot gadolim for sam, there will be a child that will be born. V'yirash kol eretz Kanan v'yaharog et ha'malachim. He will inherit. He will kill out all the kings, and he will inherit the land of Canaan. And then they told him about, okay. They told Nimrod about this dream, about this vision, about this prophecy. Okay? So they said, we have to tell Nimrod, because if we don't tell him, he's going to find out that we didn't tell him, and then he's going to kill us. So then they told him what they found out. Okay? Nimrod had an assistant. Nimrod's second-hand man. Anybody want to guess, according to the Yalkut, who Nimrod's second-hand man was?
Terach.
Very good guess. Terach, the father of Avram. Okay, and it just so happened that Terach's wife, Amtalia, was pregnant, right? So the Midrash says, one second, and then they told him the story. They knew that it was Terach, because Terach had just had its son. V'achshav, im tov ha'davar be'inecha, if it's good in your eyes, p'tzei et Terach be'kesef, right, appease Terach with money. V'kach mimenu hatinok v'hargeyu. Take this child and kill him. Lifnei shiyidal v'yikre otot sarash menuchal v'takna. Right, kill this child before this terrible thing happens that we can't fix. We have envisioned this vision. Now it's interesting because if they have the prophecy, how wouldn't they know that it's impossible to undo no matter what you do? The prophecy. It's always like, you know, you ever watch the science fiction movies and they say, you know, like, we know what's going to happen in the future, but how do you know we didn't do this to make it happen so you can't change the future? I never understood these. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So Terach is his right-hand man. So Nimrod, according to Midrash, sits down with him and says to him, yeah, I got bad news for you. I need to kill your son. Okay? So Terach tries to talk himself out of it. He doesn't talk himself out of it. According to the Midrash, what happened was, give me 3 days. On the third day, he says, send me the child. Chibel tachbula zo. So he came up with the plan. Haitalo shivcha achat shialdalo ben bioto laila shenolad bo Avraham. He had a maid who also had a son, the same time that Avraham was born. Lakach ben hashivcha umasro lidei Nimrod velakach et hakesef. So Nimrod promised to pay him a lot of money. So he sent him the kid, and he took the money. When Nimrod haraget ha-tinok, Nimrod was very happy. Forgot the whole thing. Killed the child, we're all set, let's keep going.
Why did he do that if it implies that he killed his other son already in terror?
What do you mean?
The first son, Lot's father, Haran.
I didn't say what happened to Haran. This is Avram. We don't know what happened to Avram. Al Pnei Terach Aviv. In the face, we haven't gotten to that story yet. Okay, this story. You think I'm talking about that story? No, this is a different story in the Yalkut about the amazing birth of Abraham, which is unbelievably similar, of course, to the birth of Moshe. Okay,
it's so weird.
It's crazy, isn't it?
You don't make it into the
live on.
Yes.
It's Mark, like you would think that Avram's birth would be something that like they would tell children about in God. Like, when Avram was born, there was light. Like, maybe not the whole...
Right, you would think.
It also...
But I hate to break it to you. What I'm reading to you is children's bedtime stories. This is the Jewish version of children's bedtime stories.
None of us have ever heard it.
Because your Ganenet never told it to you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What? She didn't know it. You want to know the real reason? You know what the what's the answer?
No.
A very clear answer. What made it into Rashi and what didn't make it into Rashi? Right? The story of Avraham Kibshon Ha'esh got into Rashi. Therefore, it's considered an authoritative story. Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. What do we know about Moshe Rabbeinu's birth? None of the Midrashim about his birth also got into Rashi. Whereas Avram's birth, there is no recording of Avram's birth in the Torah. Moshe's birth is a miraculous birth. We know that he's born, there are psukim about it, that he's born 3 months early, ke'ilu, and we know that his salvation is miraculous. So somebody's got to do master's thesis on the literature of comparing literature between, great personalities, biblical personalities, and how legends and midrashim develop over time, and comparative legends. Well, if Moshe is so miraculous, Avraham is the father of monotheism. Shouldn't he also be somewhat special? We have midrashim about Avraham and Nisim. We have obvious midrashim about them. So would it make sense that his birth is somewhat unique as well?
And also, this midrash puts a whole new light on Akedat Yitzchak.
Ooh.
Right, because you have two sons, and the other one is given instead of
No, never thought of that, but it does. Yeah. Okay. You have to. You have to write your master's thesis on this, right? But no, but it's like, what? I never heard this before. Exactly. I was reading this last night. We just never took the time to read through the Yalkut Me'am Loes on the birth of Avram. So go home. If you have a copy of English or somebody wants, you can share it on the WhatsApp group, and you'll see it's right there. I mean, it's right there, and the story goes on. It's a much much longer story about the negotiations and Avram's development. Now, it's interesting to note, if the Midrash were true, then Avram could not be raised as his son. How would he have to be raised? Some adopted orphan kid. Right, so it raises the issue of Avram being raised as an outsider. And remember that Moshe Rabbeinu's birth, Nimrod's son, but
just like
he was raised.
Moshe
was raised in Paro's home. Right? It's very fascinating to note that the outsider status of great leaders. How they
So
obviously, why did they leave? Al Pnei Terachavim. So this is the famous Rashi, Al Pnei Terachavim, that you all know. Look at Rashi on Kav Chet. Okay, why did what happened Pnei Terach Aviv? Says Rashi, Kavchet, on Yud Aleph Kavchet. This is the famous Rashi. I always like to say, Rita likes to tell this story, that when she first started teaching Breishit in high school, she would say to the kids, okay, take out your Tanakh, everybody, please turn to the story of Abraham in the fiery furnace. And they're all like, no, that's too far. And they'd be really confused, because everybody knows the story, but nobody knows it. It's not in the Chumash. Okay? It's not in the Chumash. It's so in our lore, like you said, you learned it in Gan, so it obviously has to be true.
If you learned it in Gan.
Al Pnei Terach Aviv, B'chaye Aviv, Midrash Agadah, says Rashi, Yesh Omim, She'al Yidei Aviv Meit. Remember Al Pnei? By the face of? Kibal Terach Al Avram Beno, Lifnei Mimrod. Avram, Terach was, if true, Terach was Nimrod's right-hand man. He was the second in command. So they lived in an idolatrous society. And at some point, the son, he went off the derech. You know what I'm saying? Like this poor guy, his son just doesn't believe in God. Now, obviously, they're gods. What are you going to do? Eventually, he's the ben sarer morer. He's starting to spread false theology. And according to the Yalkut, Nimrod himself presented himself as a deity. This is not so hard to believe. Okay, he presented himself as a deity. So a rebellion against the deity, if you're saying there's one all true God, or you start questioning the religious nature of the state, you're Morid B'Malchut. Okay, so either you accept or you don't. By the way, where is there another example of a fiery furnace in Tanakh where this exact thing happens? Anyone?
With Nimrod and
Amram. No, this is not in the Tanakh. Explicit in the text. Anybody know? What? Sefer Daniel, the book of Daniel, with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel. Right? Either you accept me, you bow down. What did he do? He built a statue the size of, the Eiffel Tower or whatever it was. Everybody, the whole world had to bow down. These three guys didn't want to bow down. And then they were thrown into the fiery furnace. So there are all these textual associations made. And they were explicitly in the Tanakh, miraculously saved. What were their names? Somebody know? Hananya, Mishael, Azariah. Very famous, famous personalities in Tanakh. These three guys said, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to bow down. We're not going to accede. And they were thrown into the furnace and they were miraculously saved. The fires didn't touch them. That's what it says. Okay, so it's very fascinating, this association between that and the mission we're going to read. So Terach, he's got this son. He reports him to Nimrod. Al shekatat et salamav, v'yishlicham mekivshan ha'esh. Okay, he crushed his, we all know the story. Right, according to the Midrash, these Midrashim do appear in the Yalkut, the ones you know. So now remember, Rashi's just alluding to them. So you have to tell the story. What's the story? You know, Avram smashed the idols, and he puts the axe in the hands of the idol, and his father comes and says, what happened? He says, I just came in. I saw him. He was hacking away at the other idols. And Avram says, you idiot. The father says, you idiot. You know the idols can't smash each other. And Avram says, and you were worshiping them because why? You know, I would like to point out that these midrashim that belittle idolatry, that belittle worship of idols, we don't understand, we don't appreciate the power of idolatry, the physical nature of it. There was a certain spirituality to it. It's mocking in nature. But obviously there was some level of spiritual sophistication. The idol represented a larger power, represented a larger force. And they would offer these offerings to these deities, to these gods, and the idol was some kind of symbolic representation thereof. Of this larger force, the force of the sun, the force of the rain, the force of sexuality, and cause people engaged in, if you ever go to the museums, anybody go to the museums, you know what I'm saying, right? The worship of idols was very often engaged in very physical activity. It was a worship of the physical. So it's very easy for us. The reason we tell them it's gone is because the story seems ridiculous, seems quite obvious. But it's easy for us to ridicule because we don't understand or appreciate the nature of idol worship at all. You know, we should just know that like billions of people today worship idols. Just go to India. Yeah. Right. So you know what I'm saying? It's much more. It's and billions of people ridicule us for worshiping. You know what you really believe, that you're going to sacrifice animals in the temple? Really? Okay. So just understand. It bothers me a little bit as an adult that the stories we tell our children, because it minimizes and ridicules idolatry as opposed to taking it seriously and understanding what was Abraham really up against and what he was trying to convince people to go away from, to abandon the accepted belief of your time, the accepted spiritual and religious practice, and to convince them to worship the one true God. So it was an uphill battle, and it was impossible. It was, you know, and here it seems easy. It seems obvious.
Rashi's saying, yeah, that he killed his friend.
Hold on. Okay? So what happened? So we all know the story. So Nahor said to Avram, listen, enough. Either you accept, or we'll throw you into the Kivshan Ha'esh. Hence the name, hence the name of the place, Ur Kasdim, the fiery furnace. The Ur, the light, the fire of Kasdim. Okay? Haran Yoshevo Amer Libo. So Haran is thinking to himself, Im Avram Notzeach Ani Mishalo. If Avram wins, I'll be with him. Im Nimrod Notzeach Ani Mishalo. If Nimrod wins, I'll stick with him. Ukshenitzel Avraham, when Avram is saved, Amrul Haran Mishamiata. So they said to Haran, Avram is saved. They said to Haran, who are you with? Us or him? Amar Lehem Haran Mishal Avram Ani. So Haran said, I'm with him. So they threw him in the fiery furnace and he died. Why did he die? He wasn't really with Avraham. He wasn't really with Ruach Shalolam. I don't know. You gotta pull that one apart. Because he was with him enough to put his life on the line to get thrown in the fiery furnace, wasn't he?
Not really. Only when he saw that Avraham was saved. Like, he wouldn't have gone in with Avraham initially. It's like you wait to see who's the winning team,
and
then I'm with them. But
it's a huge
madriga
to be saved by
Nisi. What is the winning team? Nothing happened to Nimrod. You know what I'm saying?
They were trying to prove Avram wrong, and then Avram was saved with this miraculous.
Correct. And so one could say, couldn't someone say, well, Haran, after seeing the miracle that Avram did, said, yes, I now believe. I'm with Avram. You throw me in the fiery furnace too. I accept the one true God. Because it would have been the easiest thing to do would be to say, yeah, I'm with you. Do whatever you want, Avram. But wouldn't it? And well, he would suffer nothing. Why would he endanger himself? Meaning the whole Midrash, it's strange, it's unusual. Nonetheless, according to the Midrash, that's how Haran died, because his father turned him in. But then, of course, if Avram survives, who's tainted? Like, you can't have the secretary of, second in command, the head of the military, you can't have him have a son running around who's Morid B'Malchut. Okay, so what do they have to do? Get out of Dodge. So, hence, according to Rashi, this is the Pasuk. Vayikach terach et Avram beno, et Lot ben Haran ben beno, et Arat Kanin, vayisu itam yor kastim lechet Arat Kanan, vayavo ad Haran. So the motivating factor, that's one of the reasons for this whole story of Ur Kastim, is because of this. There's another reason as well. Okay, the Hashem appears to Avraham later on in Parshat. Lech Lecha? Can anybody help me find it? Where does it say? Okay. Ani Hashem Elokim. Here we are. Oh, I just found it. Hold your place here. Okay. And turn to Pasuk, Perek Tetvav Pasuk Zion. In the middle, right before Brit Brei Nevitarim, Vayomer Elav, God is talking to Avram. You got it? Perek Tetvav Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Elav. Tetvav Zion. Vayomer Elav, God says to him, Ani Hashem Asher Hotzeiticha Me'ur Kastim Lated Lecha Et Aretz Ezot Levishta. I am the Lord your God who has taken you out of Ur Kastim, right, to give you this land as an inheritance. Really? Excuse me? Who took Avram out of Ur Kastim?
His father
took him out of Ur Kastim. Why is God now claiming credit for the fast something his father seems to do? Anybody want to know? What's anybody an answer for that? That's a hard question. God doesn't lie. So what does he mean? Is that really how it sounds like? Ani Hashem Asher Hotzei Ticha Mi'Ur Kastim. I took you out of Ur Kastim.
Well, he said that the master plan about circumstances.
Okay. Does that make you happy?
I want to make Aliyah, but I can't. And then something happens, and I get a job, and then I can't. But Hashem took me out of the way.
Or if Ur Kasdim is the fiery furnace, that's then I actually.
So if there is. So this is another proof. This is one of the strong motivations for this Midrash. Remember, I took you out of Ur Kasdim, the fire of Kasdim.
So he doesn't mean that place, he means the fire.
Correct. And that's why the Midrash is more sensible. You understand the Midrash more. Because then it would make more sense. I took you out of Ur Kastim, why did I do it? In order to give you this land. Right? That's a miraculous salvation that you deserved.
I did it for this reason.
Well, what do you think?
One might. He would have gone to Canaan if he
did. Oh, right?
Or maybe
he's got to get out of there. He's got to get out of there. So now we're left with the problem. Right? How could God say Lech Lecha Me'Artzecha if there? Where are we? We're in Haran. Okay. So why would he say Lech Lecha Me'Artzecha Me'Lardetecha? Okay. So what's the simple answer? Why would he say it if? What's the simple answer? Happened before. That is the simple answer. Who says that? Anybody want to guess who would say something as crazy as it already happened before? No, from your knowledge of the commentators on the Torah? What's that?
Where's Rina?
Anybody want to guess? Right. Rina would say it right away. She actually would. Excellent. Who says that? Who says Ein Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah? No. Ibn Ezra says it. Look at Ibn Ezra. One second. Where am I? Ibn Ezra on... Here we are. Look at Ibn Ezra on Pasuk Chavtet. Yud Aleph Chavtet, for those of you who have. It says, Eshet Nachor. It's toward the end of that commentary where it says, V'hanachon be'einai. V'hanachon be'einai. Anybody see it? I don't know if you have it or not. It's on the left, in this version, it's on the left column. V'hanachon be'einai. V'hanachon be'einai, she'parshat lech lecha, she'amar Hashem la'avram, kodem zeh ha'pasuk, shu v'yikach terach. Okay, what happened? God came to Abraham when they were already in Ur Kastim and said, Lechicha, me'artzicha, me'uradcha, me'beit avicha. Remember we said, by the way, we said it's unusual, why do we stop and have different sections? So according to Ibn Ezra, it makes very much sense that we only study Lechicha from there. Because the Torah itself organized the Torah thematically. It did not organize it chronologically. Right? The story of Abraham, we're not interested, but like, let's get rid of all of Abraham's ancestry. Well, you know, worry about that. Finish that story, and then talk about Abraham's connection to God later. The connection to God happened. So what? The Torah is not a storybook. It's not a history book. It's a book about themes. It's a book about ideas. So the idea of Abraham and his connection to God is in Lech Lecha. The idea of Abraham and his birth and his parents is in the end of Noah.
You see the same thing in the end of Bereshit with Noah. Like, Noah has introduced the last few psukim in Bereshit, and then it goes into Noah's story. Like,
correct. Yeah, we see Kumahu, he says, B'Torah, Be'echad l'chodesh ha'nishani b'shana shanit. Right? The beginning of Parshat Bamidbar starts, like, you know, after, it starts before, it's before Parshat, the whole story of Vayikra, much of Vayikra. It's not a big deal. V'achachen b'chodesh ha'bisham b'shana shanit. And later, something happened in Shmo, meaning, it's not a big deal to say that things happen out of order in the Torah.
Even if it's out of order, it still says in the Torah, the words that his father took him out of the land.
One second. Let's read. V'ha'ed she'amar ha'katuv lalechet arza kenan. Right? The Torah says, lalechet arza kenan. They went to arza kenan. Here it says, v'kasher ba'at terach el charan. But when terach got to charan, yishar makom be'enav v'yashav shan v'yamot. Okay, so they started going arza kenan, towards Canaan. Why would they go to Canaan? Why would it sense? When in the world would they want to go to Canaan for? Who initiated? Why would they say to go to Canaan? What's the obvious answer? God came to Avram and said, go to Canaan. Avram said, Dad, let's go to Canaan.
Where were they?
What? In Ur Kasdim. God said, Dad, let's go to Canaan. What is your question, Lori? Your question is, why does it say, Terah took Avram? What's your answer? How would Ibn Ezra answer that question?
It was Avram's idea.
But
Avram's
idea. Right, but Terach is the patriarch of the family, so Terach travels.
It's like, well, but it's he left his brother there.
What's that?
He left his brother behind.
He left his son behind. What? Haran is dead.
No, the other three sons, one dead, and he left one behind.
What? He didn't want to come. What are you going to do? Okay.
He's out of the picture.
What's the last words? Wait, we didn't finish. What's the last words of Ibn Ezra? Last words in the Perush?
The
Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar B'Torah.
He's the one that says that, okay? Ibn Ezra?
Yeah, all the time. Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar
B'Torah. But it's weird to say that because Mi Beit Avicha.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Wait, one second. Ilana has a question. Ilana's question is, all this works great except for Lech Lecha. Oh, no, one second. Why is it a problem? Mi Beit Avicha. Because where are they now? This solves the problem. Where are they? Where are they? What's that? Physically, where are they when God says, according to Ibn Ezra, Lech Lecha me'artzcham lecham b'tayv? They're in Ur Kasdim. That's great. So they're all good.
Why is he going to his father? If he's leaving your father's house means like,
don't bring your father with you. Of course, your question doesn't help because who does Abraham bring with him?
Lot.
Right? And
no, but it does. It's not the same thing, though.
Really? When does Avram start really growing and talking to God? When does Avram really?
Achari
pared lo. Right? It's very fascinating. God says to Avram, and this is God says to Avram, I want you to abandon your past. And Avram says, no problem. Hey, look, let's go. You know what I'm saying?
It's a little different to take an influence.
Maybe he thinks he can influence.
Why?
Because your father is the one who sets the rules in your house. And your nephew...
Yeah, it used to be like that. Wasn't that great?
The nephew is... He's younger, supposedly. You know, he's the one...
He's supposed to...
Abraham. Abraham can tell Lot what to do. As opposed to Abraham can't tell...
How'd that go for him? How'd that go for him? Didn't go so well. Anyway, okay, that's Ibn Ezra's. Everybody says, we saw the puzzle, we asked our three questions. That's Ibn Ezra's solution to the question. Ein mukdam u'mukhar b'Torah, lech lecha me'artzecha, happened earlier, happened all the way back in Ur Kasdim. It sounds like Terach initiates the trip. Okay.
He was the head of the house.
What?
He did lech lecha, but he left that, he never left his father.
Until he died.
Another problem.
Until he died.
Okay. No. One could suggest Avram interpreted Beit Avicha as his birthplace. The bayit. We all left. My father also left his Beit Avicha. One could suggest that's a little bit of a problem. Okay? Who has a bigger problem? You'd have a much bigger problem if you thought, if you preferred to say, yesh mukdam u'mu'uchar b'Torah. Remember, every time you say, ein mukdam u'mu'uchar, you have to explain, well, why would the Torah say it out of order? Meaning, ideally, everything should go in chronological order. We're telling a story. So if you're going to tell it out of order, you have to explain why. What would Ibn Ezra's answer to this question be? Correct.
So this is within that
context. Do you find that explanation sufficiently motivating in order to...
I find that it makes sense here, because here you really are tracing his lineage, and you're saying, and this is, you know, right before this, you're talking about Ru and Sarug and all these people that we have no connection to, and then all of a sudden, okay, so...
It makes so sense. Agreed.
Plausible.
Chronologically, it just gives a problem with his intention.
Plausible. Agreed. Okay. We're going to turn to Ramban. How does Ramban address this question? I just want to point out that this whole discussion is motivated by the fact that a guy who davens right next to me, his name is Yossi Saban, you know the Sabans right here? He got a book. Somebody gave him a book that he showed me over Rosh Hashanah called Keep Shuto from some Ram in Ramat Gan or something, who writes this, he wrote a book about Shuto Shel Mikra, and he has all these crazy chidushim, like... It's worthwhile to study his book. I just read the first chapter because he showed it to me during davening. Oh yeah, way beyond that. He has an interpretation on the two stories of creation that will blow your mind. Right? It's like, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. But anyway, okay. So I saw that there was a second chapter on this story. Okay? So when I went to Yossi's Tai, he said, yeah, you can borrow whenever you want. When I went to Yossi's Tai, when I went to his little thing, I thought he left it there this morning. I'm like, okay, we're going to do that section. The book was missing. So all we're stuck with is Ibn Ezra and Ramban. But hopefully, you know, maybe I'll send it if I can see what this rav says. It's a book called Keep Shuto. It just came out, like, this year, right now. And if you're into this stuff, it's definitely worth looking at. I don't know. You search on the internet. It's Keep Shuto, it's called. Okay? In bookstores near you, or maybe not.
How do these guys get credibility now?
What?
How do you know that he's a credible source?
Him? Well, you have to evaluate the ideas on their own, and you have to also decide, meaning biblical study is fraught with danger. You found it? To what, meaning, is there a fealty to Emunat Chachamim? Is there a fealty to Chazal? He clearly has it. He's coming from a perspective. A fealty, an authentic, you know, meaning because the easiest thing to do when you have trouble in biblical texts is to say, anybody know the easiest thing to do?
That was
one author, that was another author. Yeah, who wrote, one person wrote the first story of the end of Noah, and this one wrote that one. Right, so obviously we are studying these texts with one hand tied, with both hands tied behind our back. I believe that this is an authentic text given to God by God to Moshe Rabbeinu. Once you start from that perspective, then you have to try to put together these puzzle pieces to figure out, you know, who said what. But the puzzle is open.
Well, look, can you go against everything Chazal has said? Like,
what do you mean?
I'll give you another. I didn't read this book. My husband told me that Gerald Schroeder apparently just wrote a book. I can't remember the name, but he said that Avraham made a big mistake when he didn't. He should have argued with Hashem just like he argued.
That's midrashic. He's not the only one that ever said that. He's not the only one that ever said. That. I mean, it's controversial today. But
midrashim don't say that.
It's very. Let me put it this way. It's very rare to say something innovative that hasn't been said already, because people have been studying this stuff for quite a few hundreds of years. Okay, so did you find the book? You didn't find it. What do you mean? Right, there's a rich...
No, I'm saying that philosophically it's a problematic idea. I'm just concentrating on the Torah Shabbat.
Oh, he doesn't, by the way. Because what I tried to show you... Here's what I hope that you get this. In all of the talks that we have, in all the discussions we have, you notice my passion for Midrash. Right? I firmly believe Chazal studied these texts intensely, and pretty much almost anything you're going to say existed in the Midrash before. Right, they were aware of the textual problems quite aware. They had Masorah about them. And many of the discussions between Ramban and Ibn Ezra, you'll find a Midrash that says Avram was, you know, it wasn't Haran, that God came to Avram in Haran. You find a Midrash that says opposite. But they just don't couch it in language of Pirush HaPsukim. They had a different way of saying it. Their way of communicating was a much more Midrashic, much more storytelling, much more passed down, traditionally passed down. So when we read Midrash, like we're only getting a tiny piece of the Midrashic literature that exists on a specific issue. I know you'll notice they have. Can you bring me the Torah Shlema? I don't know if you see it over there. Okay, so there's a set called Torah Shlema, putting together by right over there, Menachem Kasher. Second down, left, up. There, right. See that set? So bring me Breishit. Okay, so if you see the beauty of that set is he put together this guy, Rabbi Menachem Kasher. He lived in America mostly. And he lived in Manhattan, actually, in the middle of the 20th century. Okay, he put together this unbelievable set called Torah Shlema, the whole Torah. And basically, the beauty of this is, take any pasuk, and he says, "I'll tell you every midrash that I could find on the pasuk." It's an academic work. He put it out piece by piece by piece. This is the final whatever. It's such a monumental work. He never did the Book of Devarim. He died before he could finish. Okay, which is a shame because when you get to Devarim, like, hey, what are all the midrashim on Devarim? And there's a ton of Midrashic literature on everything. And then in the end, the beauty is the footnotes. Because he will tell you, I found a different version of this in the Cairo Geniz and a different version of this in the Tosefta. Like, these are only the versions, like one version of the Midrashim that he found. Imagine all the Midrashim that we lost. Because this is all only the Midrashim that were recorded, that were written down. But, you know, I'm saying, Chazal knew. They got it. They understood how to read text. I also wanted to write a book, you know, the book the Midrash says. So that book is great because we all read it and it's wonderful. But it's the most damaging, one of the most damaging works on Midrash you could think of. Because it turns Midrash into a children's book, in essence, into a storybook. Whereas Midrash, I believe, is really, I always wanted to write a book called The Midrash Reads. Because the Midrash is a book of Chazal study. So sometimes they had Masorah, they had, you know, they definitely had Kabbalah, accepted understanding, they read text differently. But they were sophisticated, nuanced people. Let's not kid ourselves. And the Midrash says, and then you boil that down into the children's Midrash says. You know what I'm saying? Which is great, because we all want our children to read Parsha. But we adults are reading the Midrash says and thinking, you know, everything I know about the Chumash, I know from the Midrash says. You know? Sad in a way, but that's what it is. Anyway, we have to read the Ramban. We only have 6 minutes, so let's read the Ramban. Ramban on Pasuk Kaf Chet. I'm going to skip to, he quotes Rashi, he tells Rashi's story. Ha'inyan shekabalik shekiblu rabotenu b'zehu ha'emet. He says, first of all, this is actually a fascinating debate, a question. How authentic are Midrashic stories? Do I have to believe that this story actually happened? It's a fascinating discussion on its own, and it all depends upon the story, the power of the story, and the authenticity of the story. So first Rabban says, listen, I want you to know, I think this inyan shekiblu rabotenu is true. If this story happened in one form or another. Vani Mavero to explain. Avraham Avinu lo nolad be'eretz kastim. Yeah, you know, throw you for a loop. Avraham was not born in Ur Kastim. Ki avotav b'nei shem hayu. He's from the Shemites. He's a Semitic people. Kastim, b'chol eretz shinar, arzot b'nei cham. Right? Shinar, they're all, these are the lands of b'nei cham. B'nei shem are from somewhere else. The Semitic peoples were from this area. No. This area. Okay? Where is Avraham? What is Avraham known as? Avraham ha? Ivri. Right? What is Ivri? Ever? Ever ha Yarden. He's from, why would you say, Ramban says, he's from Ever ha Yarden? If he was born here, lived here, and the only time he spent in Haran is when he was traveling. Right? I was born in Washington, spent time in Detroit. Nobody was suggesting I'm from New Jersey. Thank God. Okay, because why? Because I happened to spend 2 weeks on my way in Aliyah at my parents and my in-laws' house in New Jersey. Right? You wouldn't call me a New Jerseyite. My wife, you would say. But what you wouldn't say that about me. Why, Ramban says, would you call him Avraham HaIvri if he's really Avraham HaKasdi? Why would you say that? V'akatuv amar, v'yaged l'Avraham HaIvri. Lo HaKasdi. Uktiv be'ever hanahar yeshvu avotecha me'olam. Listen, where do we read this, by the way? You're from, does that sound familiar? Anybody know where that's from? Be'ever hanahar yeshvu avotecha me'olam. Terach, Avi Avram. Would anybody know where we say that? Haggadah, Leil Seder. Right? Be'ever HaYarden Yashvu. What? Weren't they from Or Kasdim? No, they were in Ever HaYarden. Umeolat Me'olam, the word Me'olam, Torah will teach us, Ki Misham Toldotav Me'az. That's where they were from. Raya Ledavar, Nachor Becharan Haya. Nachor lived in Haran. V'imay Makom Terach Or Kasdim Be'eretz Shinar, V'akatuv Siper B'tzeitomi Or Kasdim, Lo Lakach Oto, Rak Avram Beno, V'lot Ben Haran, U'ben Beno V'sarai Kalato, In Ken Haya Nachor Nishar Be'eretz Kasdim. Remember, like you said, Nachor, in our chart, never went anywhere. Where was Nachor from? From Haran. One second. But they left Or Kasdim. So if they're from Or Kasdim, Nachor should end up in Or Kasdim, not in Haran. So therefore, says Ramban, we will continue. Aval be'ered, be'emed, in truth, eretz molardetam, eretz Aram, be'ever ha'nahar. They were born in Aram, Ever ha'nahar, around this area. Where is Aram? Ashur? I don't know, somewhere here. Haran, Aram, eretz Aram, be'ever ha'nahar. Okay?
Where?
Can you find it on the map? I can't find it. You found it? Okay. Remember what we say, Arami Oved Avi, and there's a machloket. Who's the Arami Oved Avi? Most people interpret it to mean Yaakov. Some interpret it to mean Avraham Avinu, Arami. Okay? V'hi menachalat avotav me'olam. It's it. That's where he's from forever. Blah, 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 blah. I'm going to skip because we don't have time, but it's worthwhile to read it in the translation, etc. It brings other proofs that Avraham is... Hold on. Okay. Vihine. I'm going to skip to Vihine Terach. And we skip to it because it's important to see inside. I'll wait till you find it. Vihine Terach Holid Banav. Everybody have it if you're following inside? Sure, you got it? Okay. Got it? Vihine Terach Holid Banav Gdulim. His older children, Avram and Nachor, Be'ever HaNahar Eretz Avotav. The two children, Avram and Nachor, were born in Aram, near Haran. Halach lo im Avraham beno el eretz kasdim. They traveled from Haran, something caused them to travel from Haran to Or Kasdim. Why would they travel to Or Kasdim?
Why'd
they move? According to the Yalkut, Yalkut mentions they moved because of Nimrod. Nimrod moved the entire clan, kingdom, to Or Kasdim. Okay, according to the Midrash, you're reading the Me'am Lois, it's interesting to see what motivated that. Everybody moved. Yes. V'halach lo im Avram b'no el Eretz Kasdim. And then they went to Eretz Kasdim. V'sham nolad lo b'no katan Haran. And there Haran was born. So that's why the Pasuk says, interestingly enough, you notice it says, one second. Et one second. V'yichiter shivim shana. Okay. V'yamat Haran al pnei terech aviv be'eretz molad dito be'or kasdim. It doesn't say where Avram and Nahor were born, but it only says that Haran was born in Or Kasdim. The Haran was born in Or Kasdim. Fascinating. Interesting. So like the Ramban has a sort of textual proof. Very fascinating. Okay? So, but they all went, so therefore, the whole family is now in Or Kasdim, even though Avram and his brother Nahor were born in Haran, they all migrated. V'disha Nahor b'no be'evar Nahar be'ir Haran. Okay? Nahor oshen olad be'ir ahu niyasheba mikuta, etc. Okay, v'ha'inyan ha'mekubal hazeh nimtza. This is accepted. Teal tells you, gam ken b'sefer kadmoni ha'goyim kmo shekatav Rabbi Mor Nevuchim. This story of Avram and Or Kasdim is also found in older historical books. B'sefer Avodat Ha'ikarim Hamitzriim. It's in the Farmer's Almanac of Egypt. Okay, if you look it up, ki Avram asher nolad bekuta chalak al dat ha'hamon she'uvdim ha'shemesh. Avraham, he went against the known accepted religion. They worshipped the sun. V'natan ha'melech oto b'beit ha'sohar. V'ya imahem b'tochachot yamim rabim sham. So they put him in prison, and he was engaged in disputations for many days. Achar kach pachad ha'melech yashchit amo arzo. V'yasir b'nei adam me'emunatam. So therefore the king became afraid that he would cause them all to rebel from their faith. V'garash otam makteh eretz kenan. He took away all Avram's money. He kicked them out and sent them back the other way. He says, whatever happened, we know a miracle happened. o nes nistar. Either it's a hidden miracle. Shenatam b'liv oto hamelech latzilo v'shelo yamitenu. That he, why didn't the king kill him? So for whatever reason, the king decided, I can't kill this person. So it's o nes nistar. Okay. O nes meforsam shishudcha l'kip shana eshem nitzal. So you ask Ramban, did Avraham really get thrown into the fiery furnace? Ramban says, maybe. I don't know. But Ramban does say, it doesn't matter. Because he was saved miraculously. But what's the difference if it was an explicit miracle or implicit miracle? Right? Like, why would the king send him away? And then he goes into the Ibn Ezra, etc., 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 etc. Okay, I'm skipping down a little more. I'm skipping down a lot more. V'hine terach aviv. I underlined it before, so whatever. I'm sorry if you can't find it. Hine terach aviv. V'avraham haya b'liba min hayom mahu. From the day that they were saved, she'elchu l'eretz Canaan. We got to get to Eretz Canaan. Shlidrachek me'eretz kastim mipachar hamelech. Ki charon karov lehem. They had no intention. They went vayetzu lalechet Eretz Canaan. Why did they want not go back to Haran? Because it's too close. Haran is in Nimrod's constellation. We got to go to Canaan. V'am echad v'safa achad l'kulam. It's in the, you know, the continent. It's in the constellation, the United Nations of, you know, the Nimrod Union. Okay? V'zehu tam v'yitzu mi'ur kastim l'echad ark tzakanan v'yavo ad charan asher sham mishpichoteim v'avoteim me'olam v'yeshvu b'neim v'yitekfu sham yamim rabim. So what happens? They say, we got to get out of Kastim. Where should we go? We can't go to Haran. Haran is still in the Soviet Union. Okay? So where are we going to go? Let's go to Canaan. Nobody lives in Canaan. We don't know anybody there. They start going. They get to Haran, which is what? Home. They get back home to where Avram was born, where they were originally from. What do they find? Family. They settle in. Whatever. I'm not going. Then, says Ibn Ezra, "Bisham nitsa Avram la'asot mashallah b'dato lelechet Eretz Canaan." Then, "Vayomer Hashem el Avram, lech lecha me'artzecha, mimoladetecha, u'mibeit avicha." Go from your land, your homeland, your father's house. All three things which were where, according to Ramban?
Haran.
Haran, right there. He's already there. Awesome, isn't it? You got chills? Isn't that great? Right. The,
dangerous ages.
Right. The motivating question is, why did they go, according to Ramban, why would they go from Haran to Ur Kasdim?
Right.
Right. Why would they migrate? And you'd have to say, that's a midrash. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Right.
If you don't want to give up that power.
Someone would say, if you believe that story, someone would say trade, obviously. Why do people move? People move for money.
Or they were shepherds, right? So they.
Well, who said they were shepherds?
The sheep did.
You know why you move? Because that's, I mean, if you go to the, go, it's worthwhile to go to, you ever been to the Bible Lands Museum?
Yeah.
Oh, first of all, you have to go to the Bible Lands Museum, because downstairs in the Bible Lands Museum, they have all these old books, and they have an exhibit still going on.
Oh, it's still going.
It still was there, Chol HaMoed, even Chol HaMoed, these old, old books. They have old, old Sifrei Torah that you have to see, and my favorite book of the whole thing, they have a Pirush of Tehillim, with the Radak. I actually took an illegal picture of it, and you see the censor crossed out the Radak on the, like, it was, you know what I'm saying? You see a parish of the Radak, like, you know, 500-year-old book that was crossed out by the censor. And it's like, you know, we're still here, you know, in the Bible Lands Museum. Anyway, but if you ever go through the upstairs, there's all kinds of idolatry. It's really, you know what I'm saying? It's not like we would build the museum if I was running the Bible Lands Museum. Not at all. But there are, it does tell the story. The picture, it paints an important picture of the land at the time, the biblical lands. And people migrated because the resources were in one place and the technology was in another place. And if I had copper, gold, and silver, but I didn't have the technology to do anything with them, so that's the trade route. That's where people went. The reason people moved was for money.
We know they're shepherds because they fight. You know, the shepherds fight and they say, I'll take the high ground.
You have no idea what they were before they got to the land of Canaan.
Or you think they just... Presto changeover became shepherds
what?
In the land of Canaan.
Sheep,
that's how people.
Why would you do sheep in the land of Canaan?
You did that.
Like if you had them, if you were already a
sheep. Like, how hard is it to buy sheep? Why would you do sheep in Canaan? Why would you do sheep in Canaan? Open grazing land. There's land. There's grazing. Right? In Ur Kasdim, is there grazing land?
That's why they moved.
It's not a good business plan. What do you do in, you know, in Qatar? Oh, we have sheep, but they all died. I don't know. Okay, so we asked a bunch of questions, came with a bunch of fascinating. So we saw two main interpretations. Ibn Ezra and Ramban, two main interpretations. Ibn Ezra says, "Ein mukdam mukhar b'Torah." Ramban says, "I don't buy it." Yesh mukdam mukhar b'Torah, but the Ramban throws you a loop and says, "Avram was born in Haran, moved to Ur Kasdim, and on the way back ended up in Haran." And Hashem says, "Time to leave."
It kind of seems like Ibn Ezra just takes this easier route, and the Ramban is doing cartwheels.
Yes, well, it seems more cartwheelish, but
it makes sense. He pulls it off from the.
Correct. What does Ibn Ezra do with Ba'eretz Moladet Tob or Kastim? What Ibn Ezra? Why does it say that?
He's the one that died, so he's the one that you say.
That's why there's two words. The Ramban is great on that. Right, Moladet Tob, where he was born.
Where is Ur Kasdim on this map?
There he was born. Or.
Okay.
Or. But it's just, I don't know. I just love this stuff. Anyway, but what's more fascinating and important to recognize is Ramban himself, and we should emphasize this, did Ramban believe that Abraham was saved from the fiery furnace? He himself says the story in essence is true, but in fact is not important. And that we never teach our children. They learn the Gan story, and they learn it in Rashi, but they're never taught the second level of sophistication. Abraham was saved miraculously, but we don't have to see everything happening miraculously. Sometimes these things happen. What did you say? I made Aliyah because the Kadosh Baruch Hu made me able to make Aliyah. Right? It happened. Yad Hashem was there. It didn't have to happen that, you know, I got an email saying you won $1 million. It happened because I wanted it to, and the Ribbono Shel Olam made it happen. That sometimes is a miracle as well. We'll stop here.